Word of mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Taylor Quimby in for Virginia Prescott. After the killing of Michael Brown last summer, protests drew national attention to law enforcement's increasing use of military equipment. Cameras were trained on police in Ferguson, Missouri, as they brought out mine-resistant vehicles, combat-style assault rifles, and gas masks, gear more often associated with conflict in the Middle East than the Midwest. Those images sparked debate over a federal program offering $5.6 billion worth of military equipment straight from the battlefields of Iraq and Afghanistan to U.S. municipalities under the auspices of fighting terror. And these things aren't just happening in Middle America. You may recall the local fight over Keene, New Hampshire's request for a Bearcat to repel terrorist activity at its annual Pumpkin Fest. Molly Redden is a reporter in the Mother Jones Washington Bureau. She reviewed hundreds of local law enforcement requests for armored vehicles and other military equipment to find out why they wanted it. Here she is speaking with Virginia Prescott.
So first, a little more on this federal program 1033 offering armored tactical vehicles to local police. Now, what's the stated goal of the program?
So the program was started, it was smaller back then, back in the 90s, to provide local law enforcement agencies with means to fight the war on drugs and fight crime in their neighborhoods. But the program didn't really balloon and become the massive source of funding that it is today until after the attacks of 9/11. And after that, the funding for this program really expanded under, as you said, the auspices of fighting terrorism. And alongside that, several other federal funding streams expanded to, you know, do the same thing, to arm police forces in ways that somewhat resemble military units in the name of fighting terrorism. So, you know, this 1033 program, they directly provide equipment that's coming off of those battlefields. These other programs that are sort of imitators and are even larger than the 1033 program now, they provide money.
You looked at how many applications for this kind of equipment?
More than 450, somewhere around 463, 465.
Now, were there more applications made after Ferguson?
So we wish we knew. I filed my Freedom of Information Act request shortly after Ferguson in October. For all the requests starting in the year 2012 through October of 2014, and just in August, I received the results of that request. So I wish I could tell you what happened in the year after Ferguson, but I might have to wait another 8 months to get that answer, just because these requests do take a long time.
Well, what were you after in filing that FOIA request and looking over these applications?
So I wanted to see what law enforcement agencies said about their need for this equipment behind closed doors. In the aftermath of these protests, when all eyes were on police advocates to explain themselves, you know, why there was this combat-style equipment in police armories all over the country, they spoke a lot about the need to have that equipment in a worst-case scenario, in a scenario that they have to plan for but they hope never occurs. So school shootings, terrorist attacks, active shooters, hostage situations, natural disasters where roads are impassable. You know, that's what they talked about publicly. And of course, they do that because that's really understandable. You want to protect citizens. You want police in shootouts to be safe. Those are sympathetic reasons. But behind closed doors, when they're sort of speaking in the privacy of these forms, these applications to the Defense Department, their reasons are really different. And what their reasons resemble is, you know, a lot of what civil rights activists have seen in how police now deploy SWAT teams. They say their SWAT teams are for those worst-case scenarios, but really they're to serve arrest warrants. They're to serve search warrants. They're for drug interdiction. And those are the patterns that we saw in these requests. Now, there are some goofy requests, too, like the Pumpkin Festival one. We saw some on that order. But, you know, really it's just an astonishing look at how police imagine themselves outsourcing routine policing activities drug policing, serving search warrants where the person who's the subject of the warrant hasn't even been found guilty of a crime, how they're outsourcing those to these sort of paramilitary teams.
Well, here are some of the goofier requests. An armored personnel carrier with blast-resistant floors to guard a 200-acre beach town in Delaware. In Chesterfield County, South Carolina, and there's 46,000 people live there, sheriff requested a vehicle that could withstand both roadside bombs and a type of machine gun round that could shatter concrete. Another one, the Ohio State University Police Department requesting an armored vehicle for football missions. Now, what does that mean?
I have no idea. I have no idea what a football mission is. However, we do know that they got their mine-resistant vehicle, and it started showing up on game day at their football stadium. And the department told a student newspaper on the campus that they wanted to have a quote-unquote presence at the games.
Law enforcement in hundreds of American towns have filled out applications to request MARPs, or mine-resistant vehicles, and other military surplus equipment from the federal government in order to help them do their job. Well, Molly Redden is with us. She's a reporter for Mother Jones. She reviewed hundreds of those applications to see what exactly they were asking for. Well, it certainly sounds pretty over the top in many cases. But what do we know? I mean, does bringing out the big guns actually escalate conflicts? Do we have any kind of data on how the equipment changes or alters police response?
Different civil liberties groups have looked at this question. The ACLU did a pretty great report on how SWAT teams were being used. In America, they looked at about 800 SWAT incidents, and they found that, you know, most of them involved the sort of paramilitary gear. There wasn't necessarily good enough data in all of the SWAT reports to indicate whether or not these vehicles showed up. But, you know, all of the stuff that we're talking about is usually used through SWAT teams and to outfit SWAT teams. That's why we sort of talk about these in concert with one another. So what they found is when you have these paramilitary policing units, what you end up using them for is more and more routine activities. So they found that these units would show up, you know, to serve search warrants. And in a lot of the cases, the object of the search warrant, drugs, you know, they weren't found at the scene. Sometimes they would deploy them with the explanation that it was known that the subject of the search or arrest warrant had a gun. Well, you know, 50% of American households, somewhere around there, there's a legal gun owner in the house. It's permissible for that person to have a gun. And they found that, yes, having this equipment in your arsenal pushes you to use it that way, to sort of use it more routinely. And part of the reason is that the 1033 program, they have a use it or lose it policy. You have to demonstrate that you've used it a year after you received it. And so that causes police to not hang on to the stuff until there's a worst-case scenario. If they want to keep it, they have to use it in more regular situations.
Well, I want to return to that pumpkin festival for a moment because I think it ties in with this. Now, here in Keene, New Hampshire, there was a fight over the Bearcat, and John Oliver on This Week Tonight, you know, he famously had a laugh at the town for requesting a Bearcat to maintain security at its annual pumpkin festival. Now, there was a riot at last year's Keene Pumpkin Festival. Lots of property damage, you know, cars turned over, protesters were chanting, "Bring out the Bearcat." It never apparently left its secret spot in a garage. So it's like even the awareness of military equipment raises the stakes. What do you think is going on there?
I'm sure some law enforcement advocates have said or will say, look, we did need this piece of equipment. There is that potential for this attraction in our town to cause this unrest. And, you know, I think that's a sympathetic argument. And what civil liberties advocates say in response is that we have to look at the patterns of policing, the patterns of what people use this for. Yes, there are these odd scenarios, and it's totally understandable that every town would want to be prepared for them, that, you know, everybody imagines what if the worst were to happen, or maybe in the case of the 2014 Keene Pumpkin Festival, what if the weirdest were to happen? I think what people should be encouraged to think about is how unlikely is that? And also, okay, if that were to happen, what would you use an armored vehicle for? Armored vehicles can't really be used to corral people. I mean, basically, the physical function they serve is to protect officers or to protect the people inside, usually soldiers, from heavy gunfire. And so in that situation, what would you use it for?
Well, it's pretty clear that you regard these documents as evidence of fear-mongering and being pretty much over the top. But do some local police departments actually have a need for this sort of equipment?
You know, I think what some people are trying to get folks to do is to think through, okay, this looks big, this looks protective. And, you know, a lot of officers say, we use these for door pulls. We can go right up to the side of a building, you know, open the door, blast the door off. We can get our people really close to the scene of heavy gunfire without our people being in harm's way. And that's true. That is a legitimate use for it. But that's not what we're broadly seeing police use it for. And also, the situations are incredibly rare. And, you know, I've also spoken to police who say, look, half the time that we use this stuff, we plan out everything in advance. So it's not like every town in America has to have one. You can have one an hour away, 2 hours away, and you can know that you're going to be conducting a truly dangerous raid, a raid for which you have good intelligence, not just that person has a gun permit, that you should be protected during a SWAT raid. And, you know, you can call up your local agency and they can send you one in 6 hours, and that works for you. And that's what some police have advocated for. You know, I closed my piece with an interview with the Chesterfield County Sheriff in South Carolina, and he says, look, if we need something like that, we'll just call the state. And so I think that's sort of the balance people have to think about. I don't think there's a right answer because, sure, something bad can happen in any town. And so I think what every town has to ask itself is, how do we want to prepare for that? Do we want some of these strategic locations for all officers to have access to? Or do we want one of these in every town in America? Are we that afraid? I think that's the question at the heart of this.
Molly, thanks for all your work, and thanks for speaking with us.
No problem. Thank you.
That was Virginia Prescott speaking with Molly Redden. She recently reviewed hundreds of local law enforcement applications for the use of military equipment. The results of her investigation are at Mother Jones, and you can find a link to read them at wordofmouthradio.org.